Welcome to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. U.S. Senator Mike Rounds is a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee. He says the first step to defending against a cyber act of war is defining what it is. We caught up with Senator Rounds last week in Washington to discuss his efforts to require the Obama administration to develop a policy to determine when an action carried out in cyberspace constitutes an act of war against the United States. So we're here specifically to talk about the Cyber Act of War Act that you have recently introduced. And I'm wondering if you could just start by telling us the goals of that bill.
Sure. When another country attacks the United States using traditional weapons, we pretty much know whether or not it's an act of war. We know because they've done damage to, whether it be in a municipality, whether they've killed members of our country, our citizens, and so forth. Our military knows that if there is an attack on them, they have the right to defend themselves. But what happens if it is a cyber act where they are destroying actively through either the operations process or through the information gathering process material that's vital to our economy? Just as an example, what if they're opening up the doors on dams? What if they're interfering with the operation of a nuclear power plant, or they destroy the power plant, or they allow for radiation to leak out? Those are the types of things which can be done with a cyber attack. But under current law, there is no discussion about where that becomes or creates an act of war in which our military has the legal right to respond. And so when I asked some individuals in front of our Senate Armed Services Committee hearing, I talked to the Director of National Intelligence. His name is James Clapper, Jr., and also to Lieutenant General Vincent Stewart. Now, he's the Director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, about whether or not it would be helpful to define what an act of war was in cyberspace. Lieutenant General Stewart replied saying, and I'll just give you his quote, "I think it would be extremely helpful to have clear definitions of what constitutes cyber events versus acts of war. If we get much fuller definition of a range of things that occur in cyberspace, then start thinking about the threshold of where an attack is catastrophic enough or destructive enough that we define it as an act of war, I think that would be extremely useful." Hmm. Because, you see, a cyber act of war can occur instantaneously, within milliseconds. And so unless we have a plan in place to where our defenses can be real-time, enacted immediately, it's too late to respond and actually protect some of our cyber assets.
So does the Department of Defense have anything in place right now, any strategy or guidelines in place currently, or would this all be sort of new ground?
It's really new ground, because what we do know is that if they are attacked, if the military is attacked, we know they have the right to defend themselves. What if it's the financial institution? As I say, what if it's a dam? What if it's communication systems across the United States? What if it's the computer systems that control our stock markets? These all rely on huge systems that, if shut down, can mean catastrophic results for our economy. And if it's an operations system, like for a dam or for a railway system or for controlling aircraft that are already in flight, now you're talking about the ability to create loss of life. Hmm. And these are not far-fetched. We already know that they attempted to gain access to and to manipulate the controls on a dam in the state of New York. The only thing that probably saved us there was that the gates at that time were not operational. Otherwise, we might have had a problem on it. And so what we're trying to do is to be ahead of the game here and say, look, we know that our enemies and our adversaries are getting to be very, very good at getting into our very open architecture with regards to our cyber systems. And the question is it possible for our Defense Department to be able to recognize these as attacks? And do they have permission, or can we get permission so that they can respond to defend not only our military, but to defend our civilian population as well? And I think it's reasonable to assume that the military can step in, but The question is, at what level? At what point is it simply someone trying to steal someone's ID number versus someone who is trying to get into the operational systems of our infrastructure, our communications, our transportation systems, our energy systems?
That was going to be my next question. What are some of the complexities of defining a cyber act of war versus cyber espionage or a cyber event or some malicious act? How complex is that process going to be?
I think it can be extremely complex. We know that there have been attempts through NATO and so forth to study this, but we do not have anything at the national level in which we have publicly declared that certain items would be considered an act of war against our country, and thus allowing the military to step in and make not only a defensive action, but perhaps in some cases to offensively retaliate when we know we can get to the perpetrator. There's a lot more to it. And this is the reason why we're not trying to say that the Congress of the United States should necessarily define it without proper information. What I think we need to do is to have those individuals who work in this field to lay out for us and to make some recommendations to us about the appropriate way to respond in these cases. And that's the reason why we've asked the administration to put together their best minds on this and to come back with a recommendation about what does constitute or what they would recommend should constitute an act of war that Congress could review.
Right, and let's be clear about the language of the bill. So there's a timeline on that, too, or a guideline to say they would have, it's 180 days, right?
Correct.
To come back. And why is that important that it's done in what must be a relatively short time for something so complex, if you're starting from scratch, in fact?
It is, and what it does is it motivates this administration, and not simply to simply hang it up and wait for the next administration to step in. And so if we begin now, and if this administration and those individuals who may very well hold over from one administration to the next understand that we put this in as a serious issue, it does not mean that any report coming in could not be extended or that they could ask for additional time, but this speaks to the need to get ahead of the issue and to respond with a plan sooner rather than later. I can see a time coming where we could have a significant breach and damage done to our infrastructure. And at that point, the American people have a right to ask, why, if we knew this was a possibility, haven't we done more to defend? And why haven't we taken the time to lay out in a very open manner that these would be considered an act of war, and clearly there would be retaliation for it. And this also sends a message to our adversaries that even if they have people who are acting on their behalf, if you are an agent for another country, and we can determine it to be the case, that we may very well hold that other country accountable for the bad actions of their agents.
How difficult is it to know the source, do you predict or do you already know, of an act of a cyber attack? How hard is it to find the source of it?
It can be very difficult, but we also know that we have some very good capabilities and that we are able to trace. But the question is, how far do you follow through? And today, once you let the bad guys know that you can trace them, unless you respond and take them out of the picture, they simply come back in and say, gee, they figured out our plan. We better figure a better way of doing it next time. And at some point, we can't simply have a next time. And that's where I think it's important that some things may be cyber incidences, they may be cyber attacks, but at what point are these serious enough to where they are an act of war and they will not be tolerated?
And what, when you envision retaliation, does that look like a retaliation in a traditional military way? Or are we talking about the potential of being at cyber war with us retaliating through the internet?
Well, we don't try to define how that happens, but I think most people who discuss it will tell you that it can be an escalation of the events back and forth. It would not surprise me at all, and I'm not sharing anything that I have knowledge of. I want to make that clear. But I don't think it would be a surprise to most Americans to to learn that there have been opportunities where America may very well have had the opportunity to respond and to send a message saying don't do this again or we will mess with your systems as well. I think you've heard some rumors in the press, and that's, you know, I'm not privy to anything other than what's been in the press on that. But I think it's clear that we have looked at it in that respect in the past. And in the future, we may have to go beyond that. But if we do, let's start to define what is considered serious and how we would respond in those serious situations where it may be an act of war.
Do you know, sir, if we would be the first country to define cyber act of war?
I can't tell you that because some countries may not disclose what their limits are. We know that it's something that has been discussed in military circles about how do you respond and what is the appropriate response. And as I say, the military understands that if they're attacked, they have the ability right now under existing law to respond and to protect themselves. The question comes in when you're talking about civilian infrastructure. And at what point does the attack on civilian infrastructure amount to such significance that it is an act of war on the United States?
Have there been any acts that you think in the past could have qualified as an act of war already? You talked about an attempted breach
really
of a dam, but have there? Go ahead.
Yeah, I'd really rather not get into that part of it, but I think it's fair to say that there are bad actors out there who are gaining in capabilities, and some of whom don't really care or simply don't really care how well they cover their tracks, or maybe just aren't competent enough to cover their tracks very well. But they most certainly test our systems on a regular basis. What we don't know is what has not been disclosed, I think, publicly. And we may not know how many times some of the really good and capable, I shouldn't call them good, but the really bad and capable actors that are out there might have gotten into our systems and simply didn't want us to know that they'd been in there, and they simply know how to get in, and when the time is right, if they feel the need to, they could step in at an opportune time and utilize their knowledge. And we just want them to be on record. We want to be on record that certain things are not going to be tolerated. And if they're caught, there will be, you know, there number one, we'll do our best to defend. And number two, we're going to do our best not only to defend, but to make sure it doesn't happen again. If that means taking out their capabilities, that's part of it too. And I think the military needs to have those parameters laid out for them, and we'd like to have their input on it before such actions are considered.
Some South Dakotans listening are going to be concerned about a justification for war, but I'm guessing you would say that it's already coming, whether you want it to or not, or has already arrived. What do you have to say about?
You know,
go ahead.
It's like this. No one wants nuclear war, and yet we know what constitutes an act of war with regard to nuclear activity. But defining it doesn't create it, but it does make it clear to other individuals that there's a reason to think twice about doing it. We've lived under those threats for years. Now we have a new threat, which clearly is not going away. And the sooner we find, you know, we put ourselves in a position to define what those acts of war might look like, and make it clear that they will not be tolerated, I think the better chance we have of being safe. And perhaps making them think twice about being involved in some of those those potentially life-threatening acts.
How vulnerable are we? How vulnerable are we in South Dakota to this?
We're just as vulnerable as any other place in the nation. We have, you know, just if you take a look at what we have there, we have power plants here. We have communication systems that run across our state. We have transportation systems within our state. We most certainly have internet connections with a lot of our buildings within the state where they're controlled separately. Anybody that thinks that they're not impacted, I think is wrong. Just as much as just think about just the traffic control devices within your cities, where you've got vehicles that can be traveling at high speed, and they trust traffic signals that now can be manipulated. And you know, that's a small part of it. But what if there's a decision made that someone's going to get into a nuclear power plant and cause real damage that's to the west of us and up from our prevailing winds? What about transportation, where you've got the ability to shut down our aircraft control systems, to where aircraft that are in the air literally do not communicate with ground controllers at serious times? I mean, these may sound like incidental items, but what if it's nationwide and you think about the amount of damage? What about shutting down? You shut down the New York Stock Exchange by simply delaying the reports. You can shut down an economy that impacts everybody in South Dakota. And that's something which is a very serious threat. It's not one that may directly kill someone, but it could destroy an economy and cost billions and billions of dollars over a period of months.
Could all those be considered acts of war?
That's the reason for the request, is to define what is the scope and significance and time of duration before it would be considered an act of war. That is, those are the questions that we're asking, and those are the questions that we would like to have the beginning discussions about how we respond to.
What's next for this bill? What do we want to follow up and see what happens? How do we follow it?
We have introduced the standalone bill, but the Senate Armed Services Committee thought enough about the bill to where they also included the vast majority of this particular bill, the language in our bill, in our National Defense Authorization Act, which will be coming to the floor of the Senate next week.
One more question, Senator Rounds. Why is this so important to you? There are so many different avenues you could put your energy to. Why is this one something that you're passionate about?
It's not a matter of putting all of our passion in one. It's a matter of doing our due diligence in lots of different areas. I sit on the Armed Services Committee. We're looking at what our Air Force is going to look like, what our Navy is going to look like, the threats to those locations, what our Army is going to look like, what our National Guard is going to be funded at. We're also doing the same thing when it comes to our veterans issues. We've just passed out a veterans bill out of our committee, and we're going to be having that on the floor of the Senate shortly. So it's a matter, I think part of the good news up here in Washington is that the Senate is actually getting back to work again. The bad news is that we've got lots of things that have not been addressed over a period of years, and now we're trying to do a lot of things at one time, and that means it spreads you thin. But when you see something as serious as the possibility of the impact of a cyber attack, and the significant impact it can have on our nation on an extended term, you can't simply look back at it and simply say, I'll ignore it because it's too tough to tackle. And so it's just one more thing that needs to be done, and it has to be included in the mix.
So now that you say the Senate's back to work and there's lots to deal with, I just have to ask you, what's working well right now that is kind of making that happen, the Senate going back to work and getting some stuff done?
On this particular day, it may sound like it's not a big deal, but you know, the Senate hasn't actually done appropriation bills this early in the year in 40 years. And we passed out in record time. We've now passed out of the Senate three appropriation bills out of 12, and this has just not happened in over 40 years.
Right, and I want to know why. What's working? Why?
Part of what happened is that last year, you have 12 new senators, I believe, and a group of us, like 10 of us or so, are new in the United States Senate. And after last year, looking at the omnibus bill, which was a conglomeration of all of the defense and non-defense discretionary, it's about a $1.15 trillion bill, that passed in the very last part of last year. And when we looked at that, we just said, you know, we had 3 days to look at a 2009-page bill. And that had become the regular way that Congress was doing business. They'd put in a great big bill, and people would get their favorite stuff in, and you never had a chance to look at it. A group of us went into leadership and said, look, we're not going to do that anymore. And leadership, to their credit, Mitch McConnell, John Thune, John Cornyn said, look, we agree with you, and if you'll stick with us and convince the rest of the team here that this is critical and that we'll take these bills individually, we'll commit 12 weeks to doing appropriations bills. The Appropriations Committee has worked to get all the bills out in a timely fashion. The National Defense Authorization Act was passed out a week ago. It's a matter of people are sensing that we can't just wait. We have to do things now, and we've got to do it in an orderly fashion so we can make good decisions. And now we're all kind of relying on each other to get our work done, and we're pushing each other. Today, before we left, we made an agreement that we were going to get two more appropriation bills out, and we did. And there were amendments on the floor of the Senate that were worked by both Republicans and Democrats. And so I give leadership a huge amount of credit for really sticking with this and giving us a chance to prove that regular order works, and that if we can do it, if we can do 12 appropriation bills and respond to basically over $1 trillion in spending a year out of a $4 trillion budget, it gives the rest of us hope once again that we can start to tackle the part of the budget which is really exploding, which are the portions which are entitlements, which is Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, which under today's planning is always on autopilot. There's no way to get at it, and in part because it's so huge, and that's not acceptable. So, you know, part of our next goal on this is to find a part of the process that we can dedicate to addressing Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, or they won't be here very long. Because, I mean, we're running out of money, and the costs are going up exponentially. So, but that means we've got to organize and use our time wisely.
What keeps you personally motivated to do that amount of work? When we talked to Representative Kristi Noem, she said she gets up at like 4 o'clock in the morning. What time do you get up in the morning, Senator Rounds?
I normally up about 5:30, and then we kind of roll from there. And normally we get done with, you know, it's not just a matter of the stuff that happens within the committees and on the floor, but we also try to meet with constituents throughout the day. And we'll have, you know, anywhere from 8 to 15 committee constituent meetings as well, with different groups coming in to express their concerns out of South Dakota.
And I'm sorry, so how many did you say? You said
anywhere from eight to 12 is pretty normal.
Per day.
Sometimes we've had as high as 15 and 16 in a day. Hmm. And so you kind of you stretch your time thin, but you don't want to short people, and you don't want people to go away disappointed that they didn't get a chance to at least expressed their concern to you and to your team members who are keeping track of all our points. So,
do you give yourself time to think? Do you ever have time to just sit and reflect?
Normally what I do is I take my homework home with me, and between normally we get home 7:30, quarter to 8 at night. And so from there until, you know, 10:30, 11 o'clock normally is my homework time. And I bring home my bundles and get ready for my next committee work the next day.
Senator Mike Rounds, you've been so generous with your time. I feel like I ought to let you go, but please come back and talk to us again.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Have a good day, sir.
All right. You bet. Bye-bye.